Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Balcony's first ever year-round bourbon was an inspiration. It all had to work together. A blend of carefully selected ingredients, Texas-sized pot stills, and creative people determined to find the absolute best way to usher a new whiskey along. When you discover how it pairs with a meaningful moment, suddenly the feeling of drinking great whiskey becomes a whole lot more.
Hey everybody, welcome to this week's episode of Whiskey Neat. This is your host. Wait, what's my line? hey everybody, welcome to this week's episode of Whiskey Neat, spirited conversations with interesting people. I am your host, Christopher Hart. So, this week, as you can see, I'm actually imbibing on some Distillery 291 out of Colorado. They sent me some sample bottles. I've been excited to give them a try. I have not tried them yet. And, yeah, so we actually sit down with our friends. We've been putting this together for a few months. It's been hard trying to schedule everything just right. But with our friends over at Tawakero. Tawakero is a fairly new, if not the newest distillery out of the state, that at least with products to market. So they've just this year released their barrel strength, their four-grain, grain-to-glass, bourbon whiskey, and rye. Out of Grapevine, Texas, and I couldn't be bigger fans of the guys. They're just so many people in this state are just they're just families distilling whiskey together, and husbands and fathers and brothers and sisters. I have never felt this way about a state and its distilling family like environment that we have. I mean, it's incredible. So. Let's jump right into it real quick. So this week's show is, as always, sponsored by our friends over at Tolado Distill, Artisan Spirits, leader in premium artisan products like Boonahabin, Deanston, Lecheg, Tobermory, Baines, Black Bottle, and, of course, Scottish Leader. You can pick up the entire line at your local liquor store, or if you're a retailer, reach out to your United Wine Spirits rep. And I cannot express that enough. Deanston, Boonahabin, I mean, these people, if you don't like peated whiskey but you love scotch, go try Boonahabin. Boonahabin is coming out with some of the most incredible expressions back-to-back. Beautiful cask-strength, high-proof wine finishes, fully matured ex-cask. I mean, just killing it. Glass Rev Imports. Whiskey Neat is also supported by the inspired spirits at Glass Rev Imports. And Murray McDavid, the historic Colburn Whiskey Distillery in the heart of Speyside, is packed to the brim with thousands of whiskey casks. There, the creations team apply their crafts to age, finish, and finally, blend and bottle unique statements of the greatest Scotch whiskies born of raw casks from distilleries both past and present. I am a huge fan of the episode we did last week, and I want to thank you guys for that. I want to thank Officer Jarrett Hill. I do want to thank our sponsors over last week for allowing us, or rather not taking issue with us, using their products as we put out a PSA over drunk driving. The folks over at Murray McDavid were... Bill, I couldn't thank you enough, man. You guys have been extremely supportive. I love your products. Genuinely love your products, not just because you're sponsors. The Houston Whiskey Social is just a few weeks away. We're just under 2 months away. And yeah, get your tickets today. We only have maybe a couple hundred left. We're pretty much sold out. Once the brands get their tickets, this is the fastest sellout we've ever had. And I'm really excited about it. I hope to do right by you guys. So without further ado, our friend, Alan Denny, he's got some new news to share with the class. And Jason over at Tawakero out of Grapevine, Texas. Cheers. Thanks for coming on the show, man.
Good to see you, man.
Good to see you, yeah, Alan.
You're
always
well,
a pleasure. I'm excited. We've kind of been trying to do this episode for about 6 months, believe it or not. I am a fan of you guys. You guys are, I would say, probably the newest in the state. Pretty darn new. I mean, MKT and Katie or whatever is fairly young.
As far as releasing the market, you bet it was late February this year where we came online out to the public. We've been open since 2016, so
making whiskey,
quietly filling
grain
barrels
to glass,
and just getting ready for this year.
Things have actually been pretty great. Someone once told me, I want to say it was John Curran at Favorite Brands, that for a new brand in a state like Texas, 400 cases a year is probably a pretty good mark to hit. And you guys have been in Texas since February out to retail. Do you guys know what you're at so far?
Yeah, we've already shipped, if I just do some quick math, probably in that 700 range.
So a decent first year,
up through today.
And started doing barrel picks already. I see our friends over at Cowtown Bourbon Club, they did, was it a blend of two barrels? Is that what it was?
It was, and that's a fun story. We can talk about that.
Yeah,
that was fun.
James Blackwell,
yep.
Gaddy Charlie,
yep.
Jason Reese, Sean Tran. I know Aviance Wells.
Yep.
So I'm excited to have you on and to taste through some stuff. I actually got this bottle at the last Whiskeys of the World and have not opened it yet. So why don't we jump in?
All right. Yeah.
Yeah. And let me ask you. So this is the barrel strength stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have anything that's not barrel strength that we should probably start with?
Yep. We have our flagship bourbon, 96 proof.
Sure.
That is 100% grain to glass and delicious.
Sure. Let's do it.
All right.
One of my favorite parts of the show is drinking at 10 a.m. Mm.
But, you know,
has its benefits.
Our 10 a.m. is somebody else's 5 p.m.
So. Yeah, I've said this before. I don't know if I've said it on the show. I'm sure Jack can, because he basically watches every episode twice. He's here for the live episode, and then he has to edit it. But I've said that the concept of times is a weird, arbitrary standard to hold people to for drinking.
True.
Some people might think that orange juice is a very common breakfast thing. But
I like it in the evening.
Well, but orange juice wasn't a breakfast. It wasn't identified as breakfast until the mid-19th century, or the 1900s. So it's something that we've developed. It's become part of the zeitgeist. But this whole, like, drinking at 7 a.m. versus drinking, it's drinking.
Yeah.
I'm awake. What's the big deal?
What's the problem?
Boy, if that doesn't make me sound like an alcoholic, I don't know what does.
Never wrong time.
So you guys have been making whiskey the last couple of years, fully grain to glass.
Correct.
Yeah. So let's, and if I'm not mistaken, I believe that you guys have a different or a more strict definition of grain to glass that you guys like to follow. What's your belief of grain? Because it's not technically defined in regulation. What's your grain to glass definition?
Yeah, grain to glass is just 100%. My little brother and I, we're really, really passionate about grain, water, yeast, and that is literally all it is. And so grain to glass, meaning we source Texas grain. We're in the process of looking at relationships with individual Texas farmers, individual people that are growing a grain specific in Texas, and then we take that grain right off the field, obviously bag it, get it to our distillery, and cook it. So we go from the local relationship to our distillery to the general public. So as soon as it hits this glass, you know that it's
you guys made it top to bottom. It
100% has been made by us.
Nothing sourced. Now, and I do want to reiterate that in the concept of the whiskey world, there's often a misunderstanding that sourcing is wrong. It's not the sourcing. Look, when you start a new distillery, you can either to generate revenue, you can either start making vodka and gin, which is super easy, no aging required, or you can source whiskey and go from there.
or both.
Sure, or both. As long as you're transparent and not, you know, making it look like, which, by the way, I don't know that it's been pointed out publicly yet, but our friends, which we kind of talked about before we started recording, our friends over at Devil's River has got a new cola approval, which actually carries that age statement. So, you know, it's been a few months, but he did say that once they ran out of those labels that they would be resubmitting, and there's a new cola label approval that carries an age statement, and now it also is listed as straight bourbon whiskey instead of, so it's at least 2 years old. So what was my point?
point was grain to glass.
Yeah, grain to glass. Yeah. So there's not anything inherently wrong with sourcing, but it is so much harder to not source. And that's where my hat is tipped off to you. I don't wear hats, but if I had a hat, I would take it off for you. It's so much more difficult to have an upstart. And like you said, you've been open for 2 years, not making any money, mm-hmm. and then boom.
That's exactly right. And we're extremely excited about January 15th, what we can sell. In fact, there's label approval happening right now. We've already submitted for that. What we will be selling to the general public will be a straight bourbon. And we're really excited about hitting that benchmark. I mean, we've made enough juice.
Sure.
And now every single month when we kick out our maximum production, that will have a straight label on it. And so we're really excited about that. But you're absolutely right, man. It takes a while to sit there and pay bills and wait for the bourbon to be at a place where we feel it's delicious and ready for the market.
This is not your first foray into spirits either.
That's correct.
You have another
mm-hmm.
company.
I do. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Axe on the Oak out of Colorado Springs, Colorado. That was really my start. And I could jump into that story a little bit if you guys would like. The full circle picture here is back in about 2009, I just moved here from Texas 2 years ago. Walked into a little coffee shop in Colorado Springs and had fresh roasted coffee. I had never had that ever. Maybe a little bit prior to that, actually, probably 2008.
Yeah, I grew up on Folgers and...
Yeah.
What's that blue one? Common House or
Community House?
Yeah,
exactly.
Sure,
right.
Yeah.
That was me. And it just changed my perspective entirely on what I'd been consuming.
What great coffee is, yeah.
So I sat there for a little while, walked up to the lady, and I said, hey, can I get one of those machines that you have back there? I'd like to do this. This just, I'm really intrigued.
Hey, can I be your competitor real quick?
Yeah.
can you walk me through
right.
it? Yeah.
She literally goes, no, you don't need to do that. She goes, you don't need to spend tens of thousands of dollars on one of these. She goes, go down to the Goodwill, buy a hot air popcorn popper that has a little butter dish in the top.
Sure.
Come back here, you can buy green coffee beans from me, and then you just take that home.
Roast it.
Roast it until blue smoke comes out and they turn kind of shiny milk chocolatey, and that's it. I was like, all right. So I went and spent $3 as opposed to thousands or tens of thousands.
Sure.
And started roasting coffee, and it changed everything about how I view what I consume. It led into chickens, pigs.
How do you fit a chicken into a popcorn?
Yeah,
well, yeah. That's the first question I ever had. That's really good. Fresh eggs, I should
say.
Yeah.
Sure.
Kind of starting a little small ranchette, I guess
Correct.
You could
yeah,
say.
Yeah.
Killing all my own meat, catching all my own fish, just really trying to stay out of the grocery store for a few years. Sort of simultaneously with that experience, I am an amateur musician, singer, songwriter, and at that time too, I was training in sprint and Olympic distance triathlons.
Jesus.
I had this buddy of mine, he's my big brother in music, Jason Miller's his name, and for 2 years playing music, he chased me to just drink Jack and Coke. Like, hey, man, you got to try this. This is good. This is what I drink. I'm like, nope, I'm good. I'm a beer drinker.
Sure.
Finally, one night at the Ancient Mariner in Manitou Springs, Colorado, I was like, fine, I'll try this Jack and Coke thing you've been talking about. Turns out it was delicious.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And I'd never had one.
Sure.
And so I immediately was like, man, this is good. Thanks. The next morning, got up at 6 to do a 100-mile ride with a group of guys on the road bike.
Were you hungover?
That's the thing. I wasn't. I wasn't even remotely hungover. I felt incredible.
Yeah, yeah.
And I should have been because we played music till 1. And so I should have been really hungover like normal, drinking beer, and I just wasn't. And I kind of was – I remember having that thought like, I feel really good today, and I don't know why. Just no correlation.
It's the whiskey.
It is the whiskey, or it was the whiskey. And it took me another couple of music gigs and training to kind of put that correlation together. And since then, I just became a bourbon fan. So
sure.
After that experience, then I had the jumping into, everything I want to do myself, coffee. I was playing music on the north end of the Springs, right. And I was drinking Knob Creek, which is still fantastic. One of my absolute favorites of
can't
all time.
Can't go wrong with Knob Creek.
You really can't, yeah. And I finished the song, looked at that bourbon. I said, this is really good. I wonder if I can make this stuff. And so I went home, read two forums. One was the red pill, one was the blue pill. One said, don't do it, it's highly illegal.
Yeah.
The other was kind of like, eh.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Just don't sell out of your car. Right. They probably aren't going to really do, you know, just.
Sure.
So I made a decision and bought a little 5-gallon still.
Sure.
That I put together the column and for a solid year and a half, I cooked on my stovetop every weekend, twice a weekend, and mashed twice a week. And I was
and like a big spaghetti pot.
Literally,
thing.
So yeah. That was yeah. Well, the still was about this tall with a column and hoses running out of it, and that went down to the floor, which was a 6-gallon aluminum pot that had two milk jugs in it, frozen,
sure.
With a marine bilge pump and a 12-volt battery in the kitchen for 12 hours
making meth,
and it would take 12 hours to get about a pint of what I considered was good high-proof spirit.
Sure.
And so out of that, probably 2 years, then we, me and my main partner, Casey Ross at Axe and the Oak, we went in together and bought a 15-gallon milk can still. And that was like a Ferrari, man. We then moved that to the basement, bought a big stock tank, and still ran that same bilge pump and a 12-volt, but much bigger cooling tank.
Sure.
And
just grew up from there.
And grew from there. And I still have some of those little jars at the shop in the Springs. And I was trying everything. I was reading forums where I was strictly oak chipping. So just throwing no toast, medium toast, heavy toast, French oak. I mean, all kinds of things. There were guys saying,
and
hey.
And carboys?
Just a little mason jars of
sure.
this spirit that I was making. At the same time, going to brew shops and just buying every single kind of different barley profiles that I could get, just trying all of these different recipes. And so that was a 2-year process. I still have a little Bible that I call it. I would write these recipes down and then draw a line and then have the result. I like it.
Sure.
Yeast profiles I was going through. Everything you can imagine. Champagne, all the lager yeasts, cider yeasts. Distilling yeasts.
What kind of yeast do you use now?
Can't say that.
Okay. Yeah. there's always some
something.
Things that yeah, some brands want to hold back. That's okay. That's, yeah, yeah.
That is. I firmly believe yeast is really
is
where a good point of or a good portion of most flavors come from for
sure.
Each individual distillery.
I think
so.
Four Roses would agree with you.
Yep. Yeah.
So
yeah, we did all that and then opened a business and full circle. Before I opened that business, my good buddy that introduced me to Jack and Coke, Jason Miller, we were sitting on the porch playing music one night with some spirit that I had made, and he just looks at me and says, dude, you're onto something. This is really good.
Sure.
So I roped in a bunch of my friends and
started a distillery.
Way fast forward. Yeah. We're here. So that's the Axe and the Oak story. How we doing on time?
We're good. No, we're good. We're going to take a quick break here in a second, but it's this bottle that you poured out of? Or what was the first bottle you poured out of?
The 96 proof.
Right 96 here. Proof. I was just wanting to see the proof. Let me see that real quick. What do you talk about? And again, feel free to say you can't tell me, but what do you know what size barrels you're using?
Absolutely. 25-gallon today and 53s from Kelvin Cooperage out of Louisville.
Kelvin. Aged not less than 1 year. Bourbon whiskey distilled, aged and bottled. Man, pretty simple, transparent label. I'm going to space this out because we've got 6 bottles on the table, and I want to try this rye.
Oh, I thought maybe yes. You were going to say you're going to be driving through Deer Park later.
No. Yeah, I didn't tell this story, but I've debated whether or not I should say this on air. I'm going to tell the story
just
anyways.
Let it happen.
So when I was 19, my mom's always owned and ran bars, and we were at a family event one night. I was 19 years old, and my mom let me have a beer. Totally legal.
Yeah.
Not a problem.
Yeah.
The night continues. We're at the house. A buddy of mine calls and says he needs me to come pick him up because he's too inebriated to drive. I said, sure, I've only had a couple beers, no big deal. And go pick him up on the way home, get pulled over in Deer Park. I said, well, I'm driving buddy was too drunk to drive home. I went and picked him up. Won't tell you where. And I said, and he was of age. He was the older cool kid.
Yeah, growing up. Would buy y'all beer.
Oh no, he wouldn't buy us beer. But he was he could play music. He's the guy that like got everyone in our group of friends to like play guitar, learn Smoke on the Water, a little nice. Bass, a couple bass riffs, you know, that thing that everyone goes through at 19 and 20. And I went and picked him up, got pulled over. Cop says, have you guys been drinking? I said, yeah, I went and picked him up. He goes, yeah, but have you been drinking? I said, oh, I was at the house like an hour and a half ago with my family. And I had, my mom gave me a drink, but I wasn't at a bar or anything. And he arrested me.
Oh, man.
And
was it the sergeant that was on the show?
It was Sergeant Hill that was.
You didn't tell him that?
Yeah, so I didn't want to bring it up during the interview.
Oh, that would have
been. But I spent one night.
Money.
I spent one night. I spent one night in Deer Park Jail.
Because of that?
Because I was under the age of drinking. And we actually covered it on the show.
I've got a great criminal defense attorney that could have taken care of you.
No, it's called a DWI minor or something.
Yeah.
So it's the same as running a red light. It's not a huge deal. It doesn't mean you were drunk driving. It's not anything really ridiculous. But I for weeks, I debated whether or not to...
Actually, it'd be a DUI, right?
No, there is no DUI
not
in Texas.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So in other states, there's different...
Sure, levels.
Right. But in Texas, there's DWI and DWI minor.
Got it.
DWI is a very serious offense, and it's you being irresponsible.
Yeah.
DWI minor is you being under the age of 21 and admitting to drinking to an officer, not knowing that you can't do that.
While operating a vehicle.
While operating a vehicle.
That's with any alcohol at all.
Yeah.
Correct.
You had one sip.
Yeah, and that's actually, and we talk about that in the episode last week. And I had a very great time talking to him. We've been talking for weeks, but
he doesn't know.
No, unless, he does now.
Unless he looked it up. Unless he looked it up during the
no.
Great like revenge story where
he would have brought it up.
I thought about bringing it up during the episode. And there's a moment where he covers drinking and driving and being under the age of 21 and having any alcohol in your system. And I look at him like, should I say it?
Should have, man. That would have been episode gold.
So I didn't say it. But I went and verified it after the interview. He's the guy that arrested me when I was 19. And it wasn't like this. It wasn't a huge thing. He's just like, it's a traffic ticket. If you just will take you to the thing and you can leave in a couple hours when the...
Yeah, because he was saying PI is the same thing.
Right. So it's the same as running a red light. And he... it was the most horrifying experience as a because I wasn't a bad kid, and I already had a daughter at the time, and so it was to me I was like it was yeah but then I found out later it's not even in the system anywhere. There's not like a mugshot or it's the same as running a red light. So I thought it was an amazing bonus thing. That may come out after this, but he arrested me when I was 19.
I
so
love it, man.
Only time I've ever been to jail, only time I've ever got in trouble, and lesson learned. So, what were we talking about? I thought we were jumped back into it already.
We are jumped back into it.
You can leave that story in, sure.
Yeah,
I thought we were already in it.
So I got a question. Tawakero.
Yeah.
Where'd it come from? What's it mean?
We ready?
So we're gonna leave that part in. So we'll go for 10 minutes. We'll leave that whole story in. But go ahead. Tawakero. What does it mean?
Tawakero. So Tawakero is Caddo Indian out of North Texas, and we're a big time frontier guy. I love that period in American history.
These are shaped like canteens too.
That's correct. Mm-hmm. The raw right? edge of it. So. Tawakero is, of course, how you say it. We've had a lot of really fun interpretations of how you say that word.
What's the worst?
The worst, and still my favorite, was the East Texas Bourbon Shootout.
And I have a lot of issues with that, but go
we,
ahead.
We kind of entered really late, and I don't know what channel it was. I really don't remember, but it was a news guy that took our name and read it and said East Texas Bourbon Shootout. I don't remember. Kind of dramatic. Blah blah blah. One newcomer. He said, Tawankaroo, and there's not even an N.
Sure. Tawankaroo.
Tawankaroo, and we all laughed hysterically, like, this is awesome. That's the best yet. So that's my favorite, but there's been a bunch of misinterpretations of Tawakaro.
I don't want to openly throw mud or anything, but that whole thing just seemed so ridiculously weirdly... A lot of problems with that whole thing. Came out of nowhere. And for the Whiskey Social, I'll give you an idea. So for the Whiskey Social, we raised this, about... Last year, I want to say it was just under $10,000 for veterans for the event. And it's really hard to hit that mark. And to keep prices low for brands that they participate, and to keep ticket prices still reasonable compared to other events, because all these other events are charging a lot more. Like, you know, I won't say what event, but there was an event that charged $150 for all tickets, and it's hard to do right by everybody, including the veterans, right? So they raised something crazy. Like $750,000 for charity, reported. I have no way of verifying that, but I didn't quite. None of it made sense to me. I have a little experience in event planning, a little experience in charity thing. I couldn't wrap my head around the handful of Texas distillers that did it, and maybe I think there was like 50 people who showed up who were not with brands, like they were the public.
Could be at the actual tasting with Murray. Yeah,
correct. Yeah, so I'm left flabbergasted. Like, what are you doing that I could be doing? And so I would, if anyone knows, if anyone's watching this, I would love to get some advice, because we try so hard. I mean, even our friends over Whitmire's, he
gave away a month of sales, and I'm sure he wasn't anywhere near $750,000.
A month of sales, including his expenses, right? So he didn't deduct his expenses. He's like, we're going to take the loss. Yeah, it was a gross month, and he didn't come anywhere like a tenth of that. So I'm so shocked by it, but unrelated. This was. I could tell tire proof. I'm happy with it. I'm excited. What's the difference between the gold label and the
silver?
Oh, yeah. Well, let me get back to real quick. So Tawakaro, the actual name, one of the partners, Chris, came up with this great analogy for me to use all the time. But sort of like Dances with Wolves, there weren't really names in Native American language. It was more of a phrase.
Sure.
So the actual phrase or name of Tawakaro is Bend in the River. And... twofold, my little brother and I have, and the other guys are outdoorsmen, fish, you know, we fish, we hunt, we really are trying to be in the woods as much as possible at any given moment. And so we love the metaphor on life. Everyone's sort of looking for that next bend in the river, because I can run movies in my head of all the different times I've been walking a creek and I wonder what's up there and kind of jump up there and find a honey hole, or, you know, however that looks. So the metaphor for life, we love that little word picture.
A honey hole is not what you think it is.
Yeah.
Is this a close set, Jack?
and then the name is Bend in the River. And so that's talking about a lot of things. We're very passionate about being outside and being outdoorsmen.
Frontiers people.
Kind of living that theme in a sense. That's what Tawakaro means. So we patterned it. Also, Tawakaro used to be the name of Grapevine Creek. So just there east of the shop is Grapevine Creek. It flows kind of out of the north, sort of right on the edge of DFW. That used to be called Tawakaro Creek. Right there at the creek, Sam Houston, back in 1843, formalized the peace treaty between the Indigenous nations, the Indian nations, and United States, or the Republic of Texas, excuse me. When Texas was a republic.
Don't you forget it.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, they owned part of Colorado, a lot of Colorado, all of eastern Colorado back then when Texas was a republic. And then just 2 years after that, Texas became a state. And so it really was a treaty that just sort of signaled stabilization in North Texas and kind of opened Texas to settlement.
Sure.
So there's a little plaque over there in Capel is where he camped under an oak tree. And so we patterned it after that close Texas history, the name Tawakero Distilling Company, close Texas history right there, and also the metaphor for life. We're really proud of what that means.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right, so I need something else in my glass.
Ah, yes. So we want to go barrel strength, we want to go the rye.
All right, so let's go barrel strength, okay. And then we'll go rye.
Yep.
Actually, let's go barrel strength, and then let's do this Cowtown.
Yep.
Bourbon Club pick, and then we'll go rye.
Actually, this is the same bottle that Cowtown had. It just doesn't have their label.
Sticker on
we
it?
Had
a All right, sweet. I don't have to open mine. Yep. All right.
So
push that front and center there.
And let me jump into the story of Tawakero for you guys real quick. So we left off earlier with where Axe and the Oak kind of started.
Sure.
And is still going. Casey Ross has got the reins of the company. He's just doing an incredible job for Axe and the Oak in Colorado.
I know it smells.
Go forward a couple of years after opening Tawakero, about 2015, my little brother was looking for a career change and just hits me up out of the blue and says, "Hey man, I see what you're doing in Colorado. Do you think we could do something like that in Texas?" I said, "Absolutely, we can do that. And I'm really tired of being cold, and I'd like to live close to you anyways." And
sure.
And so we started. I actually started just kind of traveling down to Texas just to see him and hang out, and formulated this idea and this plan on opening a distillery here in Texas. At the time, there were 88 distilleries in Texas. There were 96 or 98 in Colorado. So there were the same amount of distilleries in this state that there were in a state of 5 million people, as opposed to Texas of 26 million
I think last census was like 28
there
million.
There you go. Yeah, 20. So for me, a very easy decision to look at and go, yeah, that's math. That's really simple math. That makes a lot of sense.
What made y'all go to Grapevine?
My brother lived in Grapevine, so Grapevine proper. That's where he ended up. And so we put together the plan and on how to do it, how we wanted to do it, and opened the company in I would say late 2015, early 2016.
Are y'all down on Main Street?
We are not on Main Street. We're in an industrial park on the I don't have the mountains here, so it's still taking me some time to get used to my bearings, but it's on the south side of the city.
Okay.
Kind of near South Lake.
So one of the best cigar shops in Texas is
on Main Street.
Grapevine Cigar Shop. It's on Main, but yep. Main there, I mean, Christmas in mm-hmm. Texas, it's like they have some moniker for it, but it's like the Christmas experience in Texas. It's amazing to go down there.
It's really cool.
A lot of touristy walking, kind of like what you would on the Strand.
Here. Sure.
Yeah. It's really, really cool. And they're always, they've got Grape Fest, Main Street Fest, the Christmas whole
other thing. Stuff always going on there.
Wineries are pretty prevalent in the area as well.
Speaking of Strand and one of the best cigar shops in the state, our friend Alan Denny said the best in the state. Our friend Alan Denny here, the last time our listeners heard your voice, you were working for EP Carrillo, but
I was cranking it out with Ernesto, yeah.
You are now one of the owners of Galveston Island Cigar Company.
Awesome.
Lounge. That's right.
Galveston Island Cigar Lounge.
Let's try that again. Alex, Jack.
Oh.
All right, ready? You are now one of the owners of Galveston Island Cigar Lounge.
Correct.
I almost said it again just to be funny. Galveston Island Cigar Lounge.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you guys open when?
We open August 29th.
August 29th. A few days after my birthday, you are now... three and a half months old, the best cigar. I haven't been down there yet.
I know. Go figure. I think I had this conversation with you last Tuesday.
Every time we got to take a commercial break. We'll be right back after this. I promise. I'm going to make it down there.
Before Christmas?
Next week. I'll come down next week. So the problem is it's in Galveston, right? Like, I love one of the best liquor stores in the city. One of the best, most beloved liquor stores in the city is Ryan's Beautrans operation up in Spring.
It's hard to get up there.
It's hard to get up there, right? I love going to Renaissance, but it's hard to get up there. Mm. I love Galveston more than going to Renaissance. So I will be down there soon. I will come down next week. I will find a reason to take the family to lunch or something. Do something.
You can come down there and just sit on my deck.
Yep, I'm going to come down there and we're going to bleep that out. And
I said deck.
The smile after this was awesome.
It's the smile that made me highly uncomfortable. Highly uncomfortable. I will say this, this Cowtown Bourbon Club, the nose on it's fantastic. This is I like this better than the first one, and I had no problems with the first
one. So surprisingly, I love the taste on this, but I like the nose on the first one better.
Really? Right. There's a sweetness to this one I'm really enjoying.
Well, this one has it, but this one, the nose to me has a little more ethanol on the nose, where I didn't get that at all.
It should. It's 124 proof.
But the taste on this is...
It's the highest proof you've seen out of your barrels.
About 124, yeah.
So let's...
We haven't had enough time to age, to pick up a little bit of proof yet, because we barrel right at the maximum, 125, 124, 120.
Sure.
Sometimes 121, 122.
And do you add any? What do you distill to? Do you know?
On average, when we're done, we have 140 proof alcohol, 141 sometimes.
And you cut down to 125 in the barrel, and then 2 years later, it actually drops a little bit, which is, I think that's that North Texas weather.
Yeah, a little bit. It does. It again, either we don't lose any proof or it stays right where it was. So depending on how super accurate we are on cutting, sometimes it's 122, sometimes it's 124, sometimes we hit 125 right on the head.
Would you say that your area is probably one of the most consistent weather in Texas?
You know, I was actually talking with I can't believe I'm forgetting his name, gentleman from Real Spirits. He gave us a stat in the state last time we saw him up at the Bastards Ball in Austin, and that somewhere in the hill country has the average temperature of 79 degrees year round. And so it's for consistency. It's one of the best spots in the state to make an aged spirit.
I think it would be great if you did have some monster warehouse up there, and then you can let other distilleries, like a honey zone or a honey hole, as you put it, of perfect Texas weather.
Yeah, I even from coming from Colorado, what we were doing there, Texas is just its own
beast.
Yeah, it's its own beast, man. It's its own animal.
How does
it's incredible.
79 there, average temperature.
Yeah, I don't know, but it was somewhere down where they are. Real Spirits. I can't.
Are you talking about their distiller? Oh, I'm blanking on his name too.
Yes, awesome guy.
Yeah, yeah, the beard guy.
Beard,
yeah,
just a great dude, man.
It's right on the tip of my tongue.
Yeah, I don't know why I'm blanking that up, but
let me
awesome
look up the
guy.
Invoice. I know his name. It's Gavin, something right there.
Could be. Yep.
Davin Topol.
Davin. Yep.
Yeah, Real Ale Distilling. Davin.
Yep.
Yeah, what did I say? Gavin.
Close.
I was so close.
Yeah, he's a guy we enjoy having conversation with.
So. I don't know him that well. He came to the Whiskey Social last year for the first time. He seems like we've talked a little bit. He seems like an interesting guy. He's one of those people that is just quiet enough that you're drawn to trying to talk to him more. You know what I mean?
Like absolutely.
There's some people who draw in people make something about that person that makes people want to be friends with that person. That's what Pasha does. Pasha doesn't talk that much, but everyone wants... Pasha's been on the show once, and Jack can't stop talking about him. We're on episode 95? Yeah, 95, but every time Pasha comes up, he said the other day, he's like, I just realized that we always talk about Pasha. He's only been on one episode, and it was the first, and it was an awful episode.
Are you going to do a big 100th, like
so
brothers?
I won't say who, but there is... arguably the biggest name that if it happens has ever been on this show. I'm hoping to lock in that interview, and I would hold it for the 100th. It would have to happen next week.
I'm sure Wade's available.
It would have to happen next week, and we would hold it just a couple weeks. So this is episode, this will be next Friday, so 96, 97.
I'm going to be trolling every website to see who's in town next week.
Well, how do you know we're not traveling to the great state of Louisiana?
Awesome. Don't think I won't go look at who's in Lake Charles.
Yeah, well, I don't know. So anyways, very, very happy with this Cowtown Bourbon Club. And they're one of they're the first one who's ever done a barrel pick.
Our very first barrel pick.
And not only did they do that, they did two.
Yeah, so that it was such a fun evening. We had them out did some food. I think we had 330s and 253s on the floor for them to try.
So you do have some stuff in bigger barrels?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Yeah, yeah, we do. And
have you gone any bigger than 53?
No, I just saw one the other day at a brewery up in Denton that was like a 65 or...
Balcones is doing all 60s, and 60s. I know our friends over at Iron Root are doing bigger as well.
Yeah. Yeah. No, we're sticking with char number four, medium-sized barrels, and big standard 53s. But
did you try them at char three, char two? Just kind
of... we actually haven't yet. I take that back. I think I did have a couple of very early ones that were char three, and still
didn't like it.
Still char four just adds a layer of complexity that we really like and we really enjoy, and we're really curious to see probably one more summer once we get past this 2-year mark how this next summer is going to impart, because man, even the age statement, no less than 1 year, one extra summer, we hit that 18 month mark. It was staggering what happened in those little 30 gallon barrels. Yeah. They were kind of, I don't want to say syrupy, but very viscous, kind of a heavier mouthfeel, and then really sweet. And then one more summer added this pepper and spice that we're super excited about. So having this winter and maybe one more summer, I'm really curious to see what happens in those char fours. And in the industry, the cooperages that we were using, barrel 53 out of Missouri, really in a small barrel, man, you're looking at a 2.5 year lifespan is probably where you're hitting the sweet spot, and you don't really want to go
too far over that
because it starts to turn ashy and more wood flavor and tannin.
I, being a completely ignorant person when it comes to these types of things, I'd be interested to see a larger barrel with a lower char for over a longer period of time. I imagine checking in on that barrel, a year, 2 years, probably not going to be great, right? It's still working its way through. I would love to see a 2 or 3 over like a 5 or 6 year period, longer, slower maturation in a bigger barrel, less surface ratio to wood exposure, and less heavy char influence over a crazy amount of time. Because I saw a couple articles or a couple people who distill in the state who say that you will never see an 8-year Texas whiskey. Like, it can't happen in Texas. And I think that's garbage. It's garbage nonsense. One, I've tried your product. You don't know what you're talking about. Like, it might happen. It may not happen. We don't know. But Balcones, the Rumble Cask we did, is 7 years. It's the oldest thing Balcones has ever released. It's not out yet. But when that Rumble Cask comes out, 7 years, fully matured, in a tequila barrel.
Awesome.
Which is bizarre. Like, it was, we did a standard Rumble Cask Reserve, then one in Old Rosa Sherry, and then one in tequila to kind of really play around with what that spirit can do. And they're full-size barrels, long, 7 years. I mean, that's Chip Tater, right? Everyone loves to make a stand over, pre-Chip Tater. But I'm super interested to see what happens with those when they hit.
Yeah, we are too, and we're filling barrels just strictly for that. And the industry standard, when I started distilling, it was char number two, maybe a char number three, are what all the big boys do. And, of course, the Knob Creeks and the Jack Daniels and all those guys are...
Can't go wrong with Knob Creek, man.
Are just char number two and letting it sit for... however long they can. But I definitely need to get back to that, the finish the story on Tawakero.
Sure.
I think I left off where we were talking about distilleries, and I was traveling down here to Texas to do a little consulting with my little brother and Justin. And it just kind of turned into this natural progression. I think it was probably about every other month I would tell Casey at Axe in the Oak, like, hey man, I need to go to Texas real quick for a couple of days. All right, hit the road. And
how far is the drive? Did you drive?
It's about 10, 11 hours if you're driving 80 and making very quick stops from Colorado Springs to Grapevine. I was normally flying, just jump on a plane real quick and come down, and he'd pick me up. And so really what happened is I was more at, in 2016, I was more on the consultation side of the business. My little brother is the head distiller, the main guy for the recipes. He's the creative mind behind the mash bills here at Tawakera. And I was just coming down and kind of talking to him on the phone, like, yeah, this tastes delicious. These are what you've done here. These are award-winning bourbons as far as I'm concerned. And I have that experience with Axe in the Oak. We've picked up a few accolades over the years. And so 2016 opened our doors, got the equipment in, started distilling in about middle of 2017. And again, Justin is the knowledge guy on how that he was there actually putting a lot of this distilling equipment in place. We've got vodka towers, gin basket, 400-gallon system, 500-gallon
capacity. Are you guys making gin and vodka?
We're not. We're talking about it this year. I really want to do a little bit of a more traditional style gin, and he does too.
In what way?
Just dry London, in a sense. Not all the nothing wrong with any of the gins coming out of anywhere today, but the super floral and kind of big time additives and
not a fan.
They're good.
Can I make a beg? Can I beg you of something, please?
Absolutely.
So I am a recent gin convert. I'll admit that I've never been a gin expert, but I thoroughly love gin. Mm-hmm. However, I thoroughly love a specific kind of gin.
Which one is it?
Well, one that's not vodka based.
Oh, so interesting.
You go to visit places like Peerless in Kentucky, mm-hmm. or Maker's Mark, mm-hmm. and they have genuinely a delicious white dog. Right, mm-hmm. off the still, yep. oily, viscous, tasty, amazing, yummy, yummy, yummy. And I love gins that are light whiskey based. Right, so not quite 190 proof.
Sure.
That have actual flavor in the distillate, not just the adjuncts or the basket. Don't get me wrong, love the basket, love the floral notes. But in my personal opinion, drinking Avanac locally is the only gin maker in Houston that's making gin, which is kind of bizarre. We've got a bunch of people making whiskey, one company actually making gin. Avanac they use a light whiskey base for their gin, not a vodka base. So they don't distill to 180 proof and cook out all the flavor. Mm-hmm. There's still actual flavor in the raw distillate before it goes through the basket. So
that's right with our model of how we like to do it. We're sweet mash every day. We love the characteristics of the grains. We don't. I'm not doing stripping runs. We're a single run through a
column,
six
or pot?
Plate column. So a pot, and then a six plate.
Oh, a combo. Column.
Yeah, a combo. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I'm not stripping it out the first time, and then pulling, sticking an 80 proof or a 90 proof back in the still and running it again. We do low and slow, and we love that grain forward profile. And that's very important to us. And we think combination of the wheat, the yeast, and the barrels is, in our biased opinion, a very delicious whiskey.
I think that sounds like a winner to me. Let's get the next pour in. We've got one more segment after this. And I want to make sure we hit everything, including this delicious rye. So we have officially announced and formed a partnership for our independent bottlings of stuff with Iron Root. So they will be helping us legally import things and bottle things on our behalf for the event. So starting with rum.
Dude,
super excited.
Delicious. Hey, cheers.
Oh, that smells fantastic.
Yeah. Thanks for having me on. Real quick, I finished that story on Tawakera. So let me make sure there's a piece here where we just talk about.
That's fantastic.
I can't wait to talk about this.
Rye.
It's me, my little brother.
I think I like that more than
my little
bourbon.
Brother, the head distiller. Ooh. Yes.
It smells
the rye
insane.
is just, yeah. Again, my brother's recipe, I love it that he's taken this role of head distiller and just been extremely creative and really, really good at what he does. It makes my job, which is kind of the sales and
the face of the company?
I wouldn't say the face of the company, but I just get to get out and have fun.
Sure.
And, so he's that guy. There's two other brothers, the Vivian brothers, Jason and Chris. And they're more in my role, where we're literally helping to build the brand, and what we do is get out and build the brand. And so I've got the anchor, my little brother in the shop every single day cooking. I showed you guys that picture of what happened last night, where we ran a rye whiskey.
Yeah, you guys had a bit of a mishap, a bit of a spillover.
We did have a mishap, yeah. I immediately started laughing because I've been there 50 times.
It happened when we were at Ironroot this year.
Something.
Oh, really?
Something's gone wrong in a shop.
Sure.
And I just started laughing, called my brother, and he said, yep. He said, we call this distiller's tears.
Yeah. Distiller's tears. If I'm not mistaken, that floor is kind of angled down for that same reason, right?
Well, in normal places, it's not in ours. We don't have a floor drain. So this is, we're talking shop vacs for my brother. And I think Chris is in the shop too. They're going to be running shop vacs and mopping. It was a mess. It was a mess. But we had a rye whiskey ferment. They're always volatile. And it goes so nuts when we put yeast in it. It just goes so crazy that it
builds
literally
pressure.
Bubbles out and just starts flowing out like you turned on a faucet. It's really incredible to watch. I've seen it a couple times where you actually watch it happen.
How many days are you fermenting for?
Our fermentation on the bourbon, pretty much everything is. We run four fermenters. The Monday cook, we distill on Friday. So one short one there, like 3.5-4 days. Then the other three are 6 days long. So we can actually distill 5 days of the week with four fermenters. So it was just a formula my little brother and I came up with.
Sure.
And so... Yeah.
Most efficient.
That's right.
Keep going.
So I can make sure I don't have to add a fermenter to run 5 days a week. So Monday's cook, we distill Friday. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday's cook, we distill the next week, and then we start that whole process over again. So.
Wow. Yeah. How many barrels a year are you guys filling?
Right now, we're able to make roughly a 30-gallon barrel every single day. So we get about 8-9% on our...
Distillation run. Yeah, so for those who aren't familiar with that whole aspect, so let's say you've got a 750-gallon still. You do a run, you get like 8 to 10% of that, of alcohol. So you're looking at like 70 gallons, so which is not even a barrel and a half. So
right.
Our friends over at Peerless, Caleb, they're filling 2,500 barrels a year. And to paint that into perspective, so if you guys are doing, let's conservatively say 300 barrels a year.
Yeah.
Okay. Peerless is doing 2,500 barrels a year.
A year.
Buffalo Trace is doing 2,000 barrels.
A day.
A day.
Right.
A day.
A day.
Yep. Oh,
that's
God.
Exactly right.
I think 1792 had said at one point that like they're depleting X amount of acres a day. In corn or some crazy number a week or something. And I'm like, geez.
Yep, it is incredible. Yeah, how scale they get.
Well, I read something. I think it was in this. So the new Whiskey Advocate's not out yet, but the online version is. And they were saying that the United States now drinks more corn than we eat.
We
drink more corn than we eat.
Oh, than we eat. I thought you said more than wheat. So I'm like, who drinks wheat?
No, we drink more corn.
Oh, I guess beer, right?
Than we actually eat now, because so much of it is used in the. But they said, it doesn't go to waste because a lot of it goes to farm animals and stuff like that.
Sure, sure. Right into cow stock. Mm-hmm. So is that what you guys do same thing? Spent grain? You send
absolutely.
Over to-
we call it the LSS. It's a liquid solid separator. We run all of our. We're grain on everything.
What a nerd.
So grain on ferment. Grain on distilling, and then we mill down to like 3/16 of an inch, which is a pretty coarse cornmeal fine cornmeal, I would say.
You think that might contribute to your boil over with your fermentation, the size of your milling?
Oh, absolutely. I'm sure it does. You know, I try to be common sense. My brother as well. We try to be common sense in everything we do, and I always relate it to my first experience, coffee, which is percolator grind versus espresso grind. The smaller you mill it, in a sense, you're making it easier for us to extract sugar.
Sure.
And so that's how we try to do it. So even distilling, we keep that grist in there because there is alcohol actually in that little flake of corn.
Sure.
And we go right from there, cool it off to 160 degrees and run it through our other machine, which separates water from the mash or the grain, and then feed that to local farmers and pigs, cows.
So what, I think it may have been, again, Ironroot, I think... is it them that makes cornbread out of there?
Yes.
We actually are.
You guys making cornbread?
We are experimenting with that. We have a really, really fun relationship and a great relationship with the guys over at the Gaylord. And,
The
Gaylord Motel.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, hotel.
Sure.
The big one in the state. And and they've been taking some of our spent mash and making cornbread and bread out of it. They've also, the guy that kind of handles the meat side of it has been aging and brining, and I don't understand this yet. I've got to get more clarification. But brining beef or meat or pork, where he just takes that grain and kind of submerges, and again, I might be off here,
sure,
but I think this is the general idea. He coats it with grain.
And then brines it.
And so we haven't actually had any of that yet, but we like those guys a lot.
Oh, heck yeah, man.
They support us really well.
The first time we went up to Iron Root, Marsha, we were in the grain room, and they were showing us all the different corns, the blue corn, everything they had. And here comes Marsha with this humongous tray of little slices of cornbread. So for the 12 or 15 of us that were there, we actually got to try a piece of the cornbread for all the grains that they use. It was a neat little trick because of all the distilleries. I've never seen that before.
Sure, yeah, sure.
It really is. Oh, let me talk about mash bill real quick. Yeah. So on the bourbon, on the 4-grain barrel strength and our flagship, mash bill 68 corn, 11 and 11 on raw wheat, raw rye. It's always a tough one to say.
That's right. You're a 4-grain bourbon.
Correct. 13% on the malt. So we got right down the middle, 6% rye malt, 6% malted barley, low level bond, probably 2.2, 2.3. And then we do 1% of a Cara Amber, which is not really a conversion grain. It's more of just a flavoring profile that we really like. That's a heavy toast, 60 level bond, caramel amber.
Sure.
So just 25 pounds of that. So it's kind of a complex mash bill in that we're sort of using five profiles, but it is 4-grain, corn, wheat, rye, barley. And on the rye, the exact same thing, or really close. We got 68% rye malt. So there's only I might be a little off here, but maybe a 10 or under rye malt whiskeys in the world today. So at Tawakaro, my brother's super passionate about this. We all are, and I love seeing what he comes up with. But we're very interested in kind of not steering away from the mainstream because we're all federally regulated to make whiskey a certain way. But we're trying, and we're open to trying some of these different mash bills and different profiles of grain. So instead of making a rye whiskey, which a lot of people do, which is the one we actually made that blew up on us last night, we went with a Texas rye malt. So the grain's been sprouted, malted. Natural sugar is really easy to extract at that point because it's already present.
Sure.
So that mash bill is 68% rye malt, 17% raw rye, unmalted rye, and then we've got 6% wheat, 6% corn, and 3% barley. Yep. So it's a 4-grain rye malt. And we're very passionate about
the rye is
this. It
ridiculous.
Is, it is an extremely interesting profile to me. Even I've made a lot of whiskey. The rye typically is really peppery, spicy. This one has chocolate. The chocolate finish. It's a very lingering finish. We proof it down to 105. We're big advocates for a big chewy profile.
Oh, and I can't wait to get the barrel one.
You can. I know. We're all right, we'll try that. Let's go for it.
All right. So we've got 3 minutes left. Let's hit this last barrel. And I normally wait till the end, but I'm just going to go ahead and say thank you for coming on.
Oh, my
pleasure.
This
has been fun. I mean, we had lunch last time you were in town, the first time we met. And
Alan, pleasure. Thanks,
and
man.
This has been a bit more in-depth than normal. We don't normally get this nerdy about this.
A lot of the people that come on don't have the in-depth knowledge that he may have as well.
You know,
judging me over here?
Absolutely.
So
if I can
you don't
talk,
think Pauly Shore knows about grain profile?
I'm pretty sure he doesn't.
If I could just talk
even
a
know
little
about comedy.
Bit to nerd out, I can grab your glass there.
Oh, yeah.
I'd love to talk about one thing, and I would love to hear also from someone who might know more, i.e., chemical engineers or people that would understand, but we have a theory on what we do at Tawakaro, and that's the distilling process. Whenever we cut, early on when I was distilling at Axe on the Oak, I found that at 110 proof or anything lower than that, you literally started to get dirty sock flavors and just some nasty stuff coming out of the run.
At the distillation run.
At the distillation run, yep. Justin, my brother, is almost what's the word? Adamant. Or he is adamant about, very rare do we even keep anything below, let's say, 120 proof in any given run. We never go down to those lower levels. When I first started
selling, have you tried aging at those lower levels?
We have a couple of barrels at 117. Yeah.
In my head, I'm early. Thinking like, blue cheese and gorgonzola.
Sure.
Those smells and flavors initially are disgusting. Very
off-putting.
Very off-putting.
Once they mature.
Uh-huh.
But once they mature, what if you have like, what if it's, that solves the yep. Texas issue?
It could be.
Sure.
So here's where I'll geek out a little bit. So I started thinking about just that whole ideal of what is actually happening, and I'm not by any stretch, I would never call myself a master distiller. I've distilled for a long time. My brother's the guy, the distiller,
the main distiller
here,
yeah. And, head distiller,
and we both have this idea. I started looking at a common sense. So for me to geek out a little bit here, I was driving by a grain field one day, just a field of corn. I said, man, what? I had this whole thought in my head. What is it that's happening out there that could at 110 proof start to just, and I started thinking about birds flying over, wind, rain, dust coating that grain. Here in Texas, wild pigs are breaking it down and eating it, and deer are walking by it. There are, and not including the insects. I mean, everybody's eating bugs when we eat, corn. There's insects or insect larvae on that corn, and there's no distiller in the world that takes their corn out into the parking lot and sprays it off before they distill it. We just cook it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's all dry.
You cook off all, that's what cooking does.
Yeah. Right.
It kills everything, yeah.
So the common sense argument, the theory behind, just a theory, was that the further we get in any distillation run, is we're hitting methanol first, we're hitting kind of some four shots and heads, and then we get into that heart that, to me, is that 125 to 155 range, the heart of the run, and then we get tails. Every single level that we hit, we're cooking alcohol out, the temperature is going up in the pot. We're coming closer to the boiling point of water.
Killing the larva, killing the bugs, killing the dust.
So the theory was that the further along we get in the run, again, based on my own experience, it literally smelled pungent and just kind of like, oh, I don't even want to drink that.
Sure.
The theory was the further we get in any given run, we're getting closer to the boiling point of water, which has all of that stuff in every whiskey run that we do.
Sure.
Every single run's got it all. And the further we get, we're actually cooking more of that stuff that we really wouldn't eat. You would not ever pick up a piece of corn that you buy from the store and it's got like
a rat on it.
Or a chew mark out of it or something. You wouldn't eat that. You'd throw it in the trash. And so the theory was, in my own mind, again,
hey, no,
anyone feel logical, free to jump in and just kind of correct me.
Yeah.
I love to learn. I love the idea. But the further we get in any run, we're actually cooking out, as distillers, a lot of that stuff. And we kind of bank on the fact that the barrel's going to clean it up. But what we do at Tower Care, it's a little different, is we don't do it. So a lot of guys I know cook down to a very low proof to get every single drop of alcohol they possibly can out. We just don't do it. Maybe it's not different, but we don't do it. And we're extremely adamant about keeping that purest portion of the run that is high, or in a sense, high proof alcohol that's really clean, grain forward, really good. You throw it in a barrel, and next thing you know, in a year, which is on my age statement, and a couple of Texas seasons, or four Texas seasons, and we have an incredible spirit that we're very proud of. So,
well, sweet.
Yeah.
That sounds like a perfect bow on this beautiful package. I gotta tell you, I love the progress we made through standard SKU to independent casks to lower proof rye to the single barrel rye.
This is that was just an example of a single barrel rye.
Is
you guys
that part of the barrel program too?
I would have to consult with my brother on where we are with stock, everything, we are open to everything. So we would love to host Houston
HBS,
Bourbon Society and
have
you guys come up and walk through the shop and literally you could just say, let's try that one.
All right.
We don't really care.
Yeah.
We love it because a lot of times we haven't opened that barrel either. And so the discovery of maybe it's a mid-level tier, maybe it's a 12-foot high barrel, who knows? We've had bungs that you crack open and they shoot up to the ceiling because there's
the pressure was
heat
so high.
And pressure. So whatever, man, we would love to do a little barrel program with you guys and see where it goes from there.
Well, let's definitely talk about it. Thank you so much for coming on the show. I know we got to get out of here.
My pleasure.
Alan, thanks so much.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you.
Galveston Cigar Lounge.
Oops. I appreciate
I'll try
the
that
questions.
Again. Galveston Cigar Lounge is brand new, just open. What's the address?
1813 61st Street.
If you're in Galveston and you need a smoke, definitely. And if you're in Grapevine, go by and see our friends over at Tabacaro.
Yes.
Cheers, guys.
Please.
Thanks. Oh, I got to do it. Let's do it. Boom, boom, boom.
Thanks.
Balcony's first ever year-round bourbon was an inspiration. It all had to work together. A blend of carefully selected ingredients, Texas-sized pot stills, and creative people determined to find the absolute best way to usher a new whiskey along. When you discover how it pairs with a meaningful moment, suddenly the feeling of drinking great whiskey becomes a whole lot more.
Into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.